All right. It is 4:02. You are tuned into KDNK. It's Friday afternoon. Happy First Fridays. That means it is now time for Express Yourself.
Express yourself. Express yourself. You don't never need help from nobody else. All you got to do now, express yourself. Whatever you do, do it good. Whatever you do, 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 Lord, Lord, do it good. All right. It's not what you look like when you're doing what you're doing. It's what you're doing when you're doing what you look like you're doing. Express yourself.
Oh, yeah. Friday afternoon, it is time for Express Yourself, where art, creativity, and conversation intersect. I'm your host, Amy Kimberly, in the studio with Stacy Dickerson. Hi.
Hi.
We have a really interesting show planned for you. Coming up, an interview with Forrest Zerbe. Yay. Forrest is featured in a solo show, The Plants We Live With, opening tonight at the Launchpad. And after that, we have an interview with Sky Skinner from The Art Base. In between all of that, I will review the 50th Carbondale Mountain Fair. If you remember it, were you there? No. That was the old days. That was the old days. And boy, we did a lot of going back to the old times.
Yeah.
It was a great weekend, and we thank everybody for coming out and supporting. First, I am going to play a little music from the Stillhouse Junkies. They are performing in Soper's Park this Sunday.
It's 100 days living on the road.
Roll, roll, gotta roll home.
Ain't no rest commentary, carry that load.
Relax,
roll. Gotta keep on pushing till we reach the end.
Roll, roll, gotta roll home.
Wake up in the morning, gotta do it all again. Number 9.
Roll, roll, gotta roll home.
Gotta take it one car at a time. Pound for pound till it's half a ton.
Roll, roll, gotta roll home.
More than half enough to keep you on the run. Roll it on home to me. Roll it home. Gotta roll it on home to me.
Hello, everyone. This is Stacy Dickerson, and I'm speaking today with Forrest Zerbe, and we're doing Express Yourself this Friday afternoon. Okay, so I'm going to just tell you a little bit about Forrest. He currently is teaching, do you teach photography?
Yes. Yes, that's primarily what I teach.
At Colorado Mesa University in Grand Junction. But prior to that, and Forrest actually has an MFA degree in photography. And did you get that at the Savannah College of Art and Design?
Yes, that's correct.
So Forrest has a show titled The Plants We Live With that is featured right now from now until September 10th at the R2 Gallery in the Launchpad in Carbondale. And let's see. The work that Forrest is doing is this really unique and rare and beautiful art light capture called mordensage, which is a French word. And I'm going to let you tell me more about what mordensage is.
Sure. So I'm working with plants, creating photograms on silver gelatin paper. The silver gelatin paper is then put through an acidic bath called mordensage. That causes the areas that are really heavily exposed, the black areas, to bubble and actually loosen from the paper. So the emulsion will lift off the paper and I can actually manipulate it. So it kind of creates like some veiling. I like to call them veils. The process was developed by a Frenchman. It's French, mordensage, the word is French. And it was developed by a Frenchman back in the 1960s. His name was Jean-Pierre Sudre. He later taught that process at a workshop in which there were seven Americans represented. That was in 1991. One of those Americans was my instructor. He taught me about the process. So for me, photography is, you know, I like to create with my hands. I always have. So art was always very much about craft for me. And when I went to school, it was pre-digital, that pre-digital time when we were still shooting in film. And so photography was a very hands-on kind of event where you were creating prints in the dark room, working with chemistry in your hands. So when digital became big in the late 90s, early 2000s, anyone working commercially had to, you know, move away from that. And I did as well. And I started to lose that express yourself kind of feeling, you know. And so I'm revisiting really the basics of photography. And
so let's go back to Jean-Pierre. So what compelled him to like explore and create and develop this completely unique and different process of handling paper in the dark room?
So he was definitely, you know, I would consider a fine artist and printmaker within the photography field. So of course he's considered a photographer, but a lot of times photography and printmaking, they go kind of hand in hand. And he was exploring back, you know, in the 40s and 50s, bleaching of the print and then redeveloping it. And this was something that was done, it has been done for years. I don't ask me how long, but a long time, even before Mr. Sudre. Mm-hmm. And so he was experimenting with his own concoctions, recipes of chemistry. And he came across this one that actually caused this phenomena of where the blacks, the really dark blacks in the exposure, would lift, the gelatin would lift off the paper. So up to this, combination of chemicals that he made, that wasn't the case. It was just bleaching and then redeveloping the print.
So when you're saying bleaching and redeveloping, you're working all in the dark room, and so you're exposing light onto the paper Is that correct? And so is that the bleaching process,
or is that
a chemical process?
It's a chemical process. So the way a dark room works, because a lot of people don't know, is you take an image, or in my case, I make photograms, which are basically just objects, in this case, botanicals, plants, placed on the paper, and then exposed with light. And so what's not exposed is the area that the object is on, and everything else is exposed.
I see.
But if you were shooting film, let's say, and you were enlarging a picture, say you had a 35-millimeter film, you enlarge a picture, and in a larger, you would expose the paper to that light that penetrates the film right onto, projected down onto the paper. Then that paper is developed. You don't see an image until you develop it. And as you develop it, the image comes in. And then you put it through a stop bath, which is the opposite of developer, acidic and base. And then you put it into a fixer. And then you wash it. After you've washed it, you can go and bleach it. And what that does is it bleaches out all the blacks.
I see.
And it leaves the midtones and the whites.
Uh-huh.
So the highlights and the midtones.
Cool. So he was messing around with all of that, and he just came up with this, and then kept playing with it, and said, "Voila."
From what I learned about him, that's pretty much, he kind of perfected in a way. He developed the Morton-Sash process, but it was kind of building off what other people had done with bleaching processes.
I see.
We all do that. There's no one person that can say, "Oh, I'm 100% original." We all build off what other artists have done, and he that's what his thing was. And
so he taught seven Americans, and then you learned from one of those, Craig.
Stevens.
And are you teaching the process yourself?
No.
Why only seven people?
I really don't know. I think he must have offered this workshop, and he knew of these people and invited them, from what I understand. And everyone that was at that workshop, has some credits behind their names as far as, photographic artists. I was fortunate enough to meet Craig Stevens in school, in graduate school.
Uh-huh.
And he taught it was part of his curriculum. He taught like a little workshop within one of the black and white printing classes that he taught. But not many people, there's not a whole lot of people who actually work in it.
Yeah.
In the Morton-Sash process, I think as far as alternative processes are concerned. So alternative processes are all those processes that aren't digital, basically.
Right.
So there's not a whole
lot of... A dying breed.
It really is.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's definitely a resurgence. I see a resurgence in my students, for example. They wanted to learn to shoot film.
Yeah.
So I was teaching everything digitally. And then they start, Forrest, can you teach us how to shoot film? So I got a whole bunch of 35-millimeter cameras. You can get them for dirt cheap now.
Mm-hmm.
And I started teaching the kids. And it's been a really huge success. And I see this also. I've met, people who talk about it all the time, that they really are interested in getting back into the roots of photography, where your hands are involved. Because it's my belief that those flaws, those human errors, those human flaws that we see when the hands are involved, is what makes it art.
Mm-hmm.
If it's completely done by a machine...
You have some ideas about that.
Yeah.
So it's like that's your print. That's your mark. If you've somehow touched it.
Right. Exactly. And I think a lot of times it becomes your signature, because most artists make the same mistake over and over and over and over. And it's always in their piece. You know what I mean? So
how will you be able to show us your mark?
Yeah, I could probably point it out. I tend to not be gentle about anything. So there's if you look real carefully, you can see where maybe I could have been more gentle with my prints.
Huh, interesting.
But
I'll have to look at them more closely.
Yeah.
That's great. So, and how long have you been doing this then?
This process, or with this body of work, I've been doing it for about 3 years.
Uh-huh. When did you take the workshop with Craig?
That was like 2000, 2001.
Uh-huh. And so you've kind of been working a little bit of it here and there.
Well, here's the funny thing, right? I get out of graduate school and I needed to make money, right? We needed a job, right? So I started shooting commercially. That was my thing. And I just got so jaded.
Yeah.
Because it became more about work, and it wasn't the whole hands-on thing that I did in graduate school, it was gone. My original plan was to be a printer. Like when I got out of graduate school, I was going to be a printer, you know, and when they had guys who printed for magazines and stuff and they paid them lots and lots of money because they were really good at printing. Well, I was really good at printing, but those jobs went away with the new digital movement because they just use a printer and they push button and button, button, button and print, 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 right? So that went away. So I decided, well, I'll shoot, you know, commercially. And it just became like a job, and I didn't really like it. And it wasn't until I started teaching photography that I really, and I've been teaching since 2013.
Okay.
And when I started teaching photography again, that's when I really started getting back into it.
Great.
In a big way.
Great. So do you have other bodies of work? Is this the one you've been primarily working toward?
This is the one I've been primarily focused on.
Mm-hmm.
I have been working with other alternative processes, and I have pieces, you know, in those areas. I've been doing some in platinum, palladium, albumen printing, salt printing,
wow,
cyanotypes.
So
I'm really into making enlarged digital negatives, and doing contact printing is mainly what I do.
Uh-huh.
But those aren't photograms. Those are actually negatives that I'm using, digital negatives. This body of work is all photograms.
Yeah. So they're one of a kind.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Each print is one of a kind. It can't be replicated.
It's, yeah. Nothing. There's not a negative out there.
No, there's no negative out there. Photograms in general are one of a kind.
I see.
Photograms are one of a kind. But then when you do mordantage on top of it, it's, I would never be able to reproduce a print again. So if someone were to purchase one, that's it. It's gone. And then they have it, a one of a kind piece of art.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Well, they are stunningly beautiful, and sort of ethereal in a way. They're mysterious and ethereal, and I think they're really beautiful. I noticed that some of them have some tones to them. Can you tell me about that? Is that a different part of the process? Are you adding something?
Yeah, so one of the cool things about being a black and white printer is we had a lot of ability to do toning. And you can tone with all types of stuff. You can tone with, like, coffee or tea.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So,
do you tone during the chemical process or afterwards?
So afterwards. So after everything's washed, I archivally wash everything twice for 35 minutes each time. And then after everything's washed, the ones that you're speaking of, the warm toned ones, have been put back into a selenium toner.
Uh-huh.
And what's nice about selenium toner is it adds to its archival quality. So, you know, maybe it'll last a couple hundred years because the selenium has that reaction.
Wow.
So it gets selenium toned, and then I wash it again. So they've been washed quite a bit.
That's great.
There's a couple in there that I gold toned, but I can't remember which ones. I should have taken better notes. Gold toning is really cool. It's like literally like liquid gold in you.
Wow.
And not melted, but
wow,
like a chemistry one.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Cool. How are we doing on time, Amy?
4 minutes.
Four more minutes. Great. Well, we can keep talking. That's great. I appreciate that. So you have what made you come to the botanicals as the your muse in this body of work? Because, you know, with a photogram, you could use any object to be reproducing. And so how did you decide to use the botanicals for this?
I'm glad you asked that question. So I have a little farm in Grand Junction. It's a small, like, little hobby farm. And right outside of my dark room, I have this beautiful landscaping that is all natural, like, from the environment. Like,
Indigenous
plants, mm-hmm. Exactly. And so when I was playing with the process back in graduate school, I had made some of plants, and my wife and my mom, they're like, oh, we love that one, so you should reproduce. So I started that way, because one of my favorite ones from graduate school was botanical, and so I started using the plants that I literally live with every day.
Oh, that's great.
And that's why the show is called that, because they're around my property, and so I literally go out the door, I pick what I'm going to use for that day, and take it in the dark room and then make my photograms. But they also, like, there's certain plants that you'll see repeated over and over in the group, in the collection, and they've become like characters to me. Hmm. So I feel like some of them have a personality, and I like to, in my mind, make up little stories about how they must be feeling or interacting with one another. So some of the titles are about the interaction between the two plants or whatever in the scene. I've always been very into nature. I mean, that's why I moved to Colorado, right? That's why we're all here, right?
I mean, we're mostly.
We like to be outdoors. I know you were talking about camping, right? We all.
Yeah.
So I moved here for that.
Yeah.
To come to Colorado because of its wonderful natural beauty. And but then I see all the stuff that's happening with our climate. I'm sorry to make it somewhat, you know, political or whatever, but the climate changing and these things that are happening, and it worries me. And so some of my pieces look a little dark. I mm-hmm. think they're a little kind of scary mm-hmm. because of the veils and the spider web looking parts. And I think that is because, you know, for me, it's that story again about how if we're not careful, you know,
this could all go away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or yeah. change at least.
Yeah, change and change irrevocably.
in a way that may not be so.
Yeah.
Good for humans.
Yeah. You talk a little bit about the chaos that, and is that what you're speaking to right now? Is just like this is kind of this push and pull of the chaos of our world that you're witnessing just even in your little backyard.
It sure is.
Yeah.
So I can control the photogram, right? I can control where the plants are laid, the concept, but once I put it in that bath, it's out of my control.
Yeah.
So that's the chaos.
That's great. Well, Forrest, such a pleasure to talk to you today. And please, everybody, if you can come out tonight, Forrest will be speaking around 5:15, 5:30 at the launch pad and talking further about this, and you can come and see a show. It'll be up until September 10th, and really, really appreciate your work and the time that you...
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah. I appreciate both of you.
Hey, before you go, do you have a web page at all where people might be able to see your work?
I do. It's forestzerbephoto.net. So it's just my name.
Yeah.
It's Forrest with two R's. Zerbe, Z-E-R, B as in boy, E, photo, roller.net.
Great.
All right. Well, thank you. Thanks to both of you. That was so fascinating. Wow. Yeah. And when you see the prints, it will really make sense to you, all this talk. All right. I'm going to play a little Extra Gold. Extra Gold is doing a free concert tomorrow night at Taka, the Contemporary in Willits, starting around 7 p.m. Extra Gold. You're tuned in to Express Yourself on KDNK. We're just coming on to about 4:30. Lots going on tonight, First Fridays in Carbondale. Besides the great opening at Carbondale Arts, which on top of For Zerby, we also have in our other gallery a show with Nancy Lovendahl. And we're going to have Nancy on next week to hear her story, or swing by around 5:15 at the launch pad this evening, 5:30, and listen to the artist talk. It's always really inspiring and lots of fun. All right. You can also check out Race, Class, and the Blue Collar. That's at the Carbondale Clay Center. That's a show by Kyle and Kelly Phelps. It's been up since July 2nd and will run through August 28th. Really powerful show. So if you have not seen it, stick your head in there. It's worth it. All right. I was lucky enough to catch up with Sky Skinner at the Art Base. And I'm going to play our interview for you right now. Hi, I am here with Sky Skinner from the Art Base, Executive Director, just in the midst of a huge, huge year at the Art Base. How are you, Sky?
I'm great, Amy. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, it's always a pleasure to check in on what's happening. I mean, this valley is chock full of creativity and creative things happening, and the Art Base has been a central figure in that scene for 25 years.
Right. It's our 25th anniversary. We're just, it feels like the future is bright. We're really excited about everything that's happening here.
Well, before we delve in too quick for our listeners that don't know, can you explain the big transition that you just went through?
Sure. And maybe just by way of background, letting people know that we're a community art center. We're located in the heart of historic Basalt, and we've been providing exhibition opportunities for regional artists for the duration of our history, along with education art programs for adults and youth. So, and just in November 2020, we were able to purchase the Three Bears building right on Midland Avenue in Basalt, right between Cafe Bernard's and Heather's. And it was kind of a miraculous opportunity for us. And I've told a couple people lately, 2020 was the year from hell for a lot of people, but it turns out it was the year from heaven for the Art Base, because we've just been able to realize a lot of long-term goals.
Yeah, it was a brilliant move. I when I saw it, I was just like, oh my gosh, how beautiful. And it's a beautiful building. And within that building, you have two gallery spaces, correct?
Well, we've been living in very small spaces for as long as we've been around, but rented spaces, borrowed spaces, and most recently have been renting from the town of Basalt a space that was about 1,800 square feet that held everything. It held a shared gallery and classroom, our administrative offices, all of our supplies, which are myriad. So it was really like living on a boat. Mm-hmm. And this building is so ideal for us. It's about 5,000 square feet and two stories plus a basement. And we've got, we'll have two designated classrooms on the second floor. And then, yes, we've got a 1,800 square foot gallery space right on the street front. And we do, we have a main gallery, and we've also got the North Gallery. But what's really fun for us is that we've got these two 8x8 movable walls, so we can reconfigure the space to work around whatever's on display. And it's been fun to be nimble. In fact, right now we've got three distinct exhibits up in the space. We've got in the North Gallery a beautiful show of James Searle's called Complete Fragments that feature 34 of his drawings, which are just beautiful. That's up until the end of September. And then we've got our Art Base Circle group exhibit up, which features a variety of artworks from people that have been near and dear to us throughout our 24 history. And then just tomorrow night, on Friday night at 5 o'clock, we're opening the 10x10 Name Unseen silent auction.
Right, right. And the 10x10 is a yearly event. Now, has that been going on all 25 years?
Not all 25 years. We've always had, you know, some kind of an annual event and party gala. And I can't tell you precisely when we introduced the 10x10. I know I should know that, but
it's
10 or 12 years ago, I think we started doing that.
It's a really great fundraiser and so much fun, I think, to participate as an artist or as well as a purchaser. Can I ask, what's the 25? Is it mean?
Our 25th anniversary.
Oh, okay. I get it. Okay.
Yep.
Duh. I'm like, okay, I got
around,
the 10x10.
How to build awareness about that. Yeah.
Oh, well,
but
good.
The 10x10 is super fun. I mean, if people don't know, every artist, and artists are so generous about contributing their work to this cause for us each year. Everybody starts off with the same playing field, which is a 10 by 10 inch panel. And they come and pick those up and take them away and work their magic, bring them back and donate them to us. Some of them are three-dimensional and some are not, but there's just this wonderful variety. We've got about 100 pieces this year, and none of them are signed on the front. So when people are bidding on the art, they might think they know whose piece it is, but sometimes our recognizable artists will throw a curveball in there, and it's not until you get to the end of the auction, which is on Saturday, August 21st, that the winners are revealed, and so are the artists. So it's fun that way.
And you can see them online. I was looking this morning, and it is true. I mean, there are a few that I can guess who the artist might be, but that's kind of part of the fun, looking at it and seeing who you think you might recognize, and also just looking at the wide variety of art that people created around a 10 by 10 space.
Yeah, it really is neat to see. And it's fun, I think, as a patron of the art, someone who collects art, and I know a lot of us have multiple 10 by 10s in our homes that we've collected over the years. They're fun to display in a grid. But sometimes you come away with a piece from a really renowned artist that is actually quite valuable, and other times you come away with an exciting piece from an emerging artist, and that is equally exciting.
I agree. In fact, I think most of the art in my house is from emerging artists. It's also an affordable way to get art. You know, you have a chance to be able to purchase something. And I find purchasing art to be a very fulfilling experience. And for many years of my life, I thought it was unattainable to me. But once I have realized that it is, and it is a valuable thing to spend money on, a meaningful way to spend money, I love it so much.
I love it too, and I never really thought of myself as an art collector. I feel like I've always enjoyed creating my nest and feathering it with things that I think are beautiful or interesting. But it was really fairly recent in my life that I realized the art that adorns my walls is almost invariably made by people that I love or have some kind of connection with, and that's a whole different kind of art collection, it's personal to have a photograph from George Stranahan or pieces from Deb Jones or, Andy Taylor and Stacey Dickerson and Leah Potts. And I mean, you know, I could go on and on, but or a piece of ceramics by Matt Johnson. I mean, that's where it's at in my heart.
Yeah. For me too. And It also helps knowing that we are supporting the art of people we love and the livelihood. And so that brings a kind of an added joy to me. Well, so people can come to the Art Base, which everyone should, to check out the new gallery. But then they can also go online and bid, right? Can you do both? Is that how it works? Or can you only bid at the gallery?
Actually, the opposite. All of the bidding occurs online. So all of the bidding is done through your device. It's really easy to register for that. And all of that information is at theartbase.org. Mm-hmm. So, and yes, you can view the work in person or online, but all of the bidding will take place on your device, which makes it really actually lovely and easy. You can do it from anywhere in the world, and you don't have to be at the closing to still get the winning bid, because you'll be monitoring your bids online.
Right. Now let's talk about the closing. Is there that's your annual party, and how is it looking this year? I know last year, obviously, it didn't happen. How are you looking at doing that this year?
Well, it's a little bit tricky for a lot of reasons, as you well know, with the surges in the Delta variant and just navigating the management of a nonprofit during COVID-19 and thinking about how we conduct these events, whether they're openings or kind of galas. So mm-hmm. we really are making that path by walking it every day. We've just recently reinstated the mask requirement in the gallery and at our events. We just feel like we serve a fairly vulnerable population, and we want to be as responsible as we can. So with the party, we are going to have it in our current building, and our capacity is limited. So we've only got 200 tickets. So right now, we're handling it on an invitation basis as a private party, and we will see. I have a feeling it's going to sell out quickly. I'm not sure if we'll have tickets available to the public or not, mm-hmm. but stay mm-hmm. tuned on that. Mm-hmm. Either way, we are having an opening tomorrow night, which is really the public event, and that's from 5 to 7. And then we are open on Saturdays from 11 to 7. We're open Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 11 to 5. And Friday and Saturday from 11 to 7. So there are a lot of opportunities to come in here and celebrate what's happening.
Nice. All right, folks. So, you know, be sure to get to artbase.org and lay down some bids. The bidding opens tomorrow as well?
Opens tomorrow at noon.
Okay. So you can get a little jump on it. Well, let's just talk a little bit about all the other things you have going on. I love the Circle Gallery. I know you show the works of Dick Carter. You've got some Leah Potts in there, Deb Jones. Is that gallery a place where people can go in and if they fall in love with something, can they take it and it gets replaced? Or is it an actual exhibition that stays up through the summer and then you'll change it out?
Oh, great question. That particular show is the kind of show where if you come in and purchase a piece, you take it away with you, and we'll hang up another artist because we have such a long list of people who have been involved here over the years. So that gives us a chance to rotate what you see. And it's really fun, I think, for visitors because we have people who come in, you know, mm-hmm. sometimes every week, and they're always getting to see something different, whether it's in the main gallery or in the group show. And also we have the shop open, which is mm-hmm. a great opportunity to support local artists in another way. You know, we've got textiles, we've got glassware, we've got art prints and cards and ceramics, and we're working on growing that as well.
So how is the traffic in your new spot?
Whew. Mind blowing. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how much it's changed. It's just been a supersonic summer. Our art sales are breaking any records in our history, as well as our visitation numbers. So it is revelatory. Mm-hmm. The difference a block and a half could make, mm-hmm. just that we're in a spot that's so visible, and we get a lot of foot traffic, a lot of visitors as well as locals, and people really make an event of it when they come to Historic Basalt, it seems to me. They come to do a little bit of shopping and cruising the art galleries, visiting art studios, and having an amazing meal somewhere nearby. So it's really fun to be where we are, very dynamic, and we're learning a lot every day because this heretofore has not been our experience.
Right. Well, I think it's exciting to have these beautiful windows in a beautiful building where people can see in and are drawn to come in, whether they know what they're going to experience or not as well. So it's always fun to draw in the folks that don't know what to expect and then come out like, wow.
Yeah, it really is. And people, I know when I travel, I seek out the places that support local artists and artisans, and that's how I do my, you know, my gift shopping and just and mm-hmm. also getting to know a place. Mm-hmm. And I see that to be true in our constituents as well. So I love that.
Well, I will say,
I like that that's what people care about.
Exactly. You know? And I think we've seen it more and more as these last several years. It's been very interesting. At the Mountain Fair, most of the vendors said it was their best fair of any fair they've ever done, which is usually not the case at Mountain Fair. But it feels like people are really trending that way to spend their money and making that conscious choice to support local artisans, at least in this valley. And, wow, feels really good.
A crisis makes it very clear what's important to us, I think. And we start investing it in different ways.
Absolutely. So classes, you obviously run a full schedule of classes pretty much year-round. Are all these classes moving into your new building? And how are you rolling out the fall?
Yes, you're right. We do. We offer programming round the year through the calendar. And we've been keeping our summer camps over at our space in the town building for the summer. That's allowed us time to finish the remodel of our second floor, which is where all the classes will take place. And that will start in October. They'll all be upstairs. I'm really looking forward to having us all under the same roof again and really settling into what it is to live in this new space together. But we're really excited because we've never before been able to have a kids class and an adult class at the same time, or even an opening and a class at the same time. So the possibilities are pretty extraordinary. I don't think we even really understand what it's going to mean for us and for the participants in our class, but that'll all start in October. And all of the classes can be also viewed at our website, theartbase.org. And we've got some very fun, new, exciting offerings here as well from our really traditional and beloved watercolor classes with Sarah Peterson to spoon carving with Laura Wagner. And we have chunky knitting classes, and just we try to have a wide variety of offerings. We're also returning to having much more to do with visual journaling and the book arts, which was an important part of our roots, and we're bringing those back. So it's worth paying attention to what's coming and signing up for those. And our exhibits, like you said, we've got Valley Noon will be showing here in September, and Doug Grabiel in October. So got some exciting new exhibits coming up too.
Well, we're feeling pretty lucky to have you in this new building, and I really look forward to seeing all the things that you guys are going to be doing. I urge everyone, check out theartbase.org, and especially the 10 by 10 by 25. Congratulations on 25 years. You're doing a great job, Sky. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thanks, Amy. I'm really honored to be a part of the artistic fabric of this valley and working with colleagues like you and Ryan Honey and folks at the Red Brick and the chapel. I mean, we have such an extraordinary community of arts organizations and patrons here. So there's a lot to be grateful for.
There sure is. That was Sky Skinner talking about the Art Base. And that opening is tonight. And the bidding is already opened. So check it out, artbase.org, or swing on by the Art Base this evening. I think that'll probably be going till about 7 o'clock tonight. So, wow, here we are. It's about 10 to 5. You're tuned in to KDNK. I'm Amy Kimberly, and really we are just coming off of an incredible Mountain Fair weekend 2 weeks ago. And I say just coming off because it takes a while to recover and regroup and also reflect. The Mountain Fair was magic, and that magic kept many people safe. There was no super spreader event. The music was lovely. Vendors made good money, and it did not rain a drop. While there were mudslides all over the place, we somehow were spared in our little donut in Carbondale. So there were a lot of competitions. Hopefully many of you saw the winners on the Soap or Sun cover. But I'm going to go through a few of them right now. We really big congratulations to the women's bike. That's the Porcupine Loop Bike Race. Chloe Lutging, she won. Second place, Annie Gonzalez. And Annie also won the raffle. It's really exciting when a local gets to win the raffle. And that bike, it was a beautiful extra cycle created by Darren Binion and Rebecca Binion and friends. And just an amazing bike. Christy Pohl came in third. The men's bike, Hadley Henschel won. Evan Fletcher second, and Canyon Cherry third. In the kids, yay India Smith, she came in first. Lexi Mobius came in second, and Phoenix Chenny was third. Now, our cake and pie competitions, it's tough competition there, folks. Really, there's probably about 30 cakes and a little more than that pies. Stiff competitions, the judges are not easy. They are accomplished judges. In the cake, Lisa Mattson won. Sarah Kokish came in second, and Beth Johnson was third. Under the cake alternative, Amelia Eshelman was first, Peter Davidoff second, and Kay Cesark third. She whipped that cake out, I think, the night before. Good job. And in the cupcake division, Emily Eshelman, I see a family dynasty happening here, was first, Mira Bromber second, and Kaylin Bradshaw third. Big congratulations to Liza Mitchell, the only woman that came in second in fly fishing. BJ Schmidt was number one, and Dan Berg was third. In the horseshoes doubles, we had Charlie Taylor and Josh Johnson took first. In the horseshoes singles, Frank Anderson took first. Now, limbo. Limbo is always interesting. And this year we had a tie. You've got to go really low. Ben Armstrong and David Vasquez tied for first place. It's crazy. I can't even imagine my body doing that. Anna Jasmine was second, and the lovely Grace Brown took third. I do not have, I think it was maybe about 2 feet that was the winning length, or height. I guess that would be height. In the Mount Sopris runoff, in the 14-miler in the men's division, Michael Barlow took it. And in the women's 14 miles, Rachel Perkins. In the runoff, which is a 4-mile race, the men's, Jaden Peck took. And Liza Mitchell, again, what a winner you were, Liza. She won the women's 4-mile. And then she went and, I guess, did the fly casting. Wow, good job. In our pie categories, in the cream category, Gloria Green won, Jen Liddington came in second, and Jackie Johnson third. The exotic pie, Jeff Liddington won. See, there's just baking dynasties all over this town. Chris Bilby came in second, and Larry Ott third. Wow, that could be three men, though. Chris could be a female, too. Hard to say, but good job, guys. And in the fruit, we have Jackie Johnson, Peter Davidoff, and Gloria Green coming in that order. Wood splitting, Dave Emig won the men's. And boy, there was a lot of fun to be had there. Matt Langhorst took second, and Mark Ross took third. And in the women's, Alyssa Baker took the title, with Stacy Neal coming in second and Amy Ackley third. We do not want to forget about our dogs. The worst in show was Falco, and the best in show was Luna. We just want to thank everybody that came out and made the fair great. We do still have some pie aprons and cake aprons for you winners, so stop by the launch pad. And until next year, you guys, lots more happening, and you'll be able to hear about it all on Express Yourself. Stay tuned next week for the Aspen Space Station. We're going to interview Laura Whitley about that. It sounds very cool. And we'll have Nancy Lovendahl. Until then, you guys, just stay safe, take care of each other, and remember, we live in a special place, and it's great to be together, and we must take care of this place and all the great things that can happen here. Here we go.